As we just heard, there's been a significant increase in the number of states considering outright bans on abortion. Up until recently, the primary argument of those opposed to abortion has been that the fetus is a person deserving of legal protection. Now we're seeing more emphasis placed on arguments claiming that abortion harms women's mental and physical health, including assertions that abortion is so far outside the realm of normal maternal behavior that informed consent for abortion is impossible. One reason why the arguments that abortion hurts women are becoming more prominent is that there's been a concerted effort by the anti-choice movement to publish studies purporting to document adverse mental and physical health consequences, thereby creating the perception that there's a body of credible scientific evidence to support these claims. The assertions that abortion harms women must, however, be viewed skeptically, and the so-called evidence supporting them carefully examined. In many instances, the claims are unfounded or misleading. I'll review some of these arguments and provide examples to illustrate why they're unsupported. Ultimately, the evidence does not provide a basis on which to justify an outright ban on abortion that forces women to carry unwanted pregnancies to term and denies them the fundamental autonomy to make reproductive health care decisions. The most common basis on which those opposed to abortion rest their claims that abortion is harmful to women is that undergoing an abortion adversely affects a woman's mental health. For example, Stanley, I'm going to talk about South Dakota. For example, a task force of the South Dakota legislature convened to consider abortion concluded in 2005 that women with a history of induced abortion are at significantly higher risk for bipolar disorder, depressive psychosis, neurotic depression, and schizophrenia. The task force went so far as to find that it is simply unrealistic to expect that a pregnant mother is capable of being involved in the termination of the life of her own child without risk of suffering significant psychological trauma and distress. To do so is beyond the normal, natural, and healthy capability of a woman whose natural instincts are to protect and nurture her child. The United States Supreme Court, in its recent decision upholding the federal abortion ban, the ban on so-called partial birth abortion, gave credence to these assertions when it stated that while we find no reliable data to measure the phenomena, severe depression can result if women come to regret their abortions. Now, it's beyond the scope of my presentation to address all of the allegations regarding abortion and mental health, so I'm going to focus on two examples, suicide and depression, to illustrate why these claims must be carefully scrutinized. As an initial matter, several well-performed studies and literature reviews have concluded that abortion poses no more risk to mental health than giving birth, that significant psychiatric sequelae after abortion are rare, and, not surprisingly, that the most powerful predictor of a woman's mental state after her abortion is her mental state before her abortion. Now, a link between abortion and suicide is frequently cited as a negative mental health outcome that supports prohibiting abortion outright. This year, abortion ban legislation in several states contained findings that an abortion places a woman at a greater risk for suicide than carrying a pregnancy to term. Studies performed by Gissler et al. On women in Finland are routinely cited to support these claims. A close look at the findings in those studies illustrates how this evidence is being misused to claim a causal connection between abortion and suicide when no more than an association has been demonstrated, and that association is likely due to other factors. Although the Gissler studies did find an association between abortion and suicide, they also reported higher rates of death by homicide, accident, and natural causes for women having abortions compared to those giving birth. Gissler acknowledges that the association between abortion and suicide, as well as all other causes of death, is likely due to common social or other risk factors rather than the induced abortion. And these studies certainly do not support the suggestion that abortion is the cause of a higher suicide rate. Now, the claim also that abortion causes depression is perhaps the most common argument used to support bans based on mental health impact. The most frequently cited studies for these are those done by David Reardon, who's the director of the Elliott Institute, whose, quote, mission and ministry, close quote, includes political reform aimed at ending abortion, a fact that is rarely disclosed by the journals in which he's published. Although his work is heavily relied on by those who seek to ban abortion, his methodology has been roundly criticized. For example, in 2002, Reardon and Kugel published an analysis of the National Longitudinal Study of Youth, reporting that married women who aborted were significantly more likely to be at higher risk of clinical depression. Schmig and Russo looked at the same data and reported in 2005 serious methodological flaws in the Reardon study, including exclusion of women at the highest risk of depression associated with early childbearing. Based on their analysis of the same data that Reardon looked at, Schmig and Russo concluded that there is no credible evidence that abortion of an unwanted first pregnancy puts women at a higher risk of depression than carrying an unwanted first pregnancy to term. Turning now to physical health, a specific issue often raised to demonstrate the physical dangers of abortion is the so-called link between abortion and breast cancer. In 2007, a bill introduced in Georgia stated among its findings to justify a complete ban on abortion that 30 years of abortion on demand have resulted in an increase in breast cancer. The claim that induced abortion increases the risk of breast cancer has, however, been definitively refuted by numerous studies. In fact, the National Cancer Institute, oh, I think I went too far. Can you go back? Can you go back one more? All right, whatever. I'll get there in a minute. Okay, I think there's just a couple missing. In fact, the National Cancer Institute has concluded that induced abortion is not associated with an increase in breast cancer risk. Also in 2007, bills seeking to introduce ban abortions that were introduced in Alabama and Mississippi state that submitting to an abortion subjects a pregnant woman to significant health risks and that the abortion procedure is inherently dangerous to women's physical health. According to the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, however, long-term risks sometimes attributed to surgical abortion, including potential effects on future reproduction and cancer risk, when carefully evaluated, demonstrate no significant negative impacts. The South Dakota Task Force, however, dismissed ACOG's conclusion on, among other grounds, the fact that abortion statistics are unreliable, the fact that maternal mortality and statistics for abortion do not include violent deaths and deaths due to causes to cancers in which abortion may play a contributing factor. And thus we see that in reaching its conclusions that abortion is harmful to physical health, the South Dakota Task Force criticized the CDC statistics, misused studies such as Gissler's to say that abortion increases the risk of death across the board for all causes, and simply ignoring the studies that the National Cancer Institute relied on to conclude that abortion does not increase the risk of breast cancer. What we do know about access to abortion in women's health, a little out of order, is that even if abortion is illegal, women will find ways to obtain them, often placing themselves at serious risk. According to the Guttmacher Institute, 19 million illegal abortions occur worldwide each year. 13% of worldwide maternal deaths are attributable to unsafe abortion. And that may not seem so applicable to this country, but at the same time, we are seeing already an increased use of illegal misoprostol by vulnerable women in this country to induce abortions. Thus, any serious discussion of banning abortion on the basis of physical harm to women must take into account the public health implications of the inevitable rise in illegal abortions that will occur. The South Dakota Task Force findings regarding informed consent for abortion draw conclusions based on no evidence whatsoever and are nothing really more than an attempt to cast the task force's views as to the proper role of women in society into official findings. And these are perhaps the most outrageous and troubling assertions that have been publicly stated for how abortion harms women and why it should be banned. On the issue of informed consent, the task force found that it is so far outside the normal conduct of a mother to implicate herself in the killing of her own child that either the abortion provider must deceive her into thinking the unborn child does not yet exist or encourage her to defy her very nature as a mother to protect her child. It also found that there can be no doubt that a pregnant mother considering an abortion is under stress and vulnerable to the suggestions of others. However, after the stressfulness of the decision and procedure have ended, women's cognitive abilities return to normal, often ushering feelings of guilt, sadness, and regret. The task force went even further and concluded that the current legal policy that protects the destruction of a woman's relationship with her child, meaning abortion, is a denigration of women, and that state policy should promote motherhood and counter the claim that the right to abortion liberates women. And finally, it summed up its views by stating that the intrinsic beauty of womanhood is inseparable from the beauty of motherhood. Of course, these statements are wholly contrary to the very notion of informed consent, which embodies the idea that individuals should be empowered to make autonomous reproductive decisions. And the notion that women who want abortions need protection and have temporarily lost their cognitive abilities relegates some pregnant women, only those considering abortion, to the status of a child or an incompetent. A pregnant woman who decides to carry to term, however, is wholly competent to do so, even if she puts her own life and health at risk, because she is acting in conformance with her essential nature as a woman. There are a lot of counters to these arguments, and I'm running out of time, so I'll get to two that I think get right to the point. First, morality alone is insufficient justification for the government to intrude on the private lives of women and the clinical freedom of physicians. And second, this is from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, eliminating or reducing women's reproductive choice is manifestly not a means of protecting them. In conclusion, credible scientific evidence does not support the claims that abortion harms women. While there is a need for careful assessment of existing studies and additional well-performed studies, the contentious debate over abortion should not be mired in bad science. Ultimately, however, it should not be up to the state legislatures to weigh the mental or physical benefits or risks associated with carrying a pregnancy to term or having an abortion. These sometimes complex decisions must be left to women in consultation with their health care providers. Even if abortion carries some risk of adverse mental or physical health outcomes, that does not justify forcing women to carry pregnancies to term. In 1992, a majority of the Supreme Court believed that the ability of women to participate equally in the economic and social life of the nation has been facilitated by their ability to control their reproductive lives. And given the importance of access to women's ability to determine their life's course, it's critical that any evidence alleging to support bans on abortion should be carefully examined and held to the highest standards. Thank you.